the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
On today's podcast, I, Aaron Wiegman, the Senior Wealth Advisor for Financial Sense Wealth Management, and Crystal Kessler, also a wealth advisor here at Financial Sense Wealth Management, are here to talk to you a little bit about behavioral finance, which is altogether important these days as we wind up looking at the ever-changing economy and outlook and, you know, all the fun times when we're anticipating recession coming up. And so when we talk about behavioral finance and what kind of decisions that we're making here going forward, I think it's a good conversation for us to have.
Yes. So just in terms of what behavioral finance is, just so everyone knows, behavioral finance helps us understand how financial decisions are made around investments, risk, personal debt, savings, financial planning strategies, and how it's influenced by human emotion, biases, and cognitive limitations of the mind in processing and responding to the information.
Okay, so that's a great definition. Now, what does that mean?
All right. Well, if everyone found the definition helpful, definitely send an email in so I can, you know, shove it in Aaron's face. Just kidding. But no, some of the most common decision-making biases that we encounter, one of the biggest ones is confirmation bias. So it's exactly how it sounds. You look for information that confirms your own belief. And I think a lot of us struggle with this when it comes to investing or just as a bias in its own.
So I mean, so if I'm a bull, I'm only going to be looking for information that's going to confirm that I should be a bull right now, as opposed to maybe looking for the other side. So if I really like tech stocks, I'm finding all the information, all the news stories, the articles that are going to tell me that I should be investing in tech stocks right now.
Exactly. And we aren't always right. So one thing that people should be doing is always looking for the opposing side of the argument, just so that way you can make a rational decision based off of what you see happening and what you should be doing.
So you mean there might be some blind spots?
There might be. Okay. What's another good one, Aaron?
You know what? So I think right now what we wind up encountering quite a bit is loss aversion. Any sort of loss that I take is going to hurt two times more than any gain that I have, right?
Yes.
So as people are encountering these losses right now, it is so much more painful. And we love the gains, but the gains don't count as much as the losses do.
Right, exactly. Like, I think one area that you were like looking forward is maybe just holding on to a position that is consistently losing because you think that eventually it's going to bounce back. But really, maybe we should have sold it a little while ago, but you don't want to lock in that loss.
Sometimes you just have to cut bait.
Yeah, sometimes. Yeah, just take the loss. Sometimes it's nice to have that loss for your taxes going forward. You know, at least
mentally speaking, it might be just a wise thing to do.
Yeah. And then a lot of the time we'll see clients, because they're so loss averse, they just sit on cash and not put it into the market. So I think it is true. I mean, I know I hate losing money. But also, I do
not know. Alone in that.
Exactly. And I know right now I'm sometimes worried about putting that money back into the market, but we always have to look forward thinking and take our own emotions out of it and put it on the sidelines and get ready to reinvest it in the market, because we always know that the market does come back over time. Another good one is herding bias. So herding bias is, like, again, how it sounds. It's following the crowd. So doing what other people are doing at the time. It's a natural instinct that we as humans have. We want to, you know, do what other people are doing and follow the crowd, keep up with the Joneses. But a lot of the times that isn't good for us, right?
So I was at that Future Proof conference a couple of weeks ago, and they showed some clips of this movie called This Is Not Financial Advice. And I'm not sure when it's exactly coming out, but it's a documentary about this guy who, with the herd of people on Reddit and Wall Street Bets and all that, he put all of his money into Dogecoin. And that same investment, I mean, that did very well for him, but I mean, he was following the crowd. He was leading the crowd. So he followed that. I think he went from something like $75,000 all the way up to over $3 million. And now it's come back substantially. So, I mean, when you talk about following the crowd in the last couple of years, you know, on one end, it's following the crowd into the market or whatever sort of risky investment or meme stock or crypto. But, you know, right now, the follow the herd tends to be the mentality of, I need to hedge my bets because the whole market is going down. The thing that you have to kind of think of is, you know, the wise Warren Buffett says, when people are greedy, you should be fearful. And when people are fearful, you should be greedy. So it's kind of going that, you know, it's counterintuitive to what's going on right now, but it's the wise bet to be making.
Another one I think that a lot of us struggle with is the familiarity bias, where we invest in what we know, or we, you know, we follow what we know, just because, you know, we might be good at it. So maybe your company has restricted stock, or they have, you can invest within your company and you overbuy, or you're over allocated to that one company, just because you know, well, it's something that can actually hurt your overall portfolio just in general. So sometimes, you know, just investing in what you know isn't the best thing for you. Or maybe investing in all US companies because you know the US and you know it does well. Well, there's a lot of opportunities when it comes to, you know, foreign investing. So it's something that you shouldn't just always lock into what you know. You should look into other opportunities as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you look at clients or people that you know that are in the tech industry, so they only wind up investing in tech. You know, they're in the energy industry, so they only invest in energy. They're in real estate, so they only buy, you know, more investment properties. So it's a lot of, you know, what you know. And I guess just regionally speaking, you invest in what you know too. So if you were an investor on the East Coast, you know, the Northeast, what do you think you'd be investing in there?
I mean, if you're thinking East Coast, that's New York, you're thinking Wall Street stocks.
Sure.
Finance.
Financial stocks are probably more prevalent, you know, with people investing over there. In the Midwest, maybe that's more industrial stocks. Here in the West Coast, it's probably more tech stocks. And in the South, it's probably more energy, things of that sort. So, you know, you can be biased just based on the region and what it is that you know right there. It's just kind of understanding that bias and just saying, maybe I might be a little bit overallocated to some of that stuff.
Exactly. So it's kind of looking outside of what you know is going to be helpful in general, and really diversifying your portfolio is going to help you in the long run.
Right. What do you think about this other one? It's recency bias.
I think that's the one a lot of us struggle with the most. So it's when individuals make decisions based off of what's happening, you know, recently in the here and now. So I think a lot of people are seeing that the market is going down. We're in a bear market. We're down 23% from the highs. So everyone is kind of like, oh, it's going to continue to go down, you know, doomsday effect. And that's not the case at all. I mean, the markets do rebound, or, you know, vice versa. If the market's doing really, really well, you know, we were in a bull market since 2009. So a lot of the times they're going to want to be more aggressive and put more money to work, kind of thing, because we always think that the market's going to go up at that time. And that's not necessarily the best decision.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I guess the other thing that where that comes into play too, is I was just thinking about, you know, trying to pick certain investments. And, you know, maybe you're looking at your 401k investments and you're looking back on, here's the average, you know, 1, 3, and 5 year returns on things. And you're basing how you wind up allocating your 401k based on just what those returns look like. Maybe not the best idea. And, you know, speaking with someone about what the overall allocation to that portfolio should look like for the long run, as opposed to just kind of trying to chase those returns.
Exactly. Yes. And I think the last and biggest bias that we do see is the framing bias. So basing your experience on certain timeframes. So making a decision on the way things are presented rather than the actual facts. So a lot of, you know, people who, you know, were invested between what was it that we were looking at, 2000 and 2009?
Yeah, so that 2000s decade was really bleak.
Yes, exactly. Very flat returns. People, you know, there wasn't much going on. I mean, based off of what we saw, the average annual return within the S&P was less than 1%. So nothing really going on. But vice versa, when you look at the bond markets during that time frame, the average annual return was 6.3%.
That's when I first got into the investment world. So that was my time frame that I was used to, just I guess my experience coming into the investment markets, right? So it was one bear market, a couple of okay years, and then another bear market. So my investment thesis might be a little bit more risk averse than maybe someone coming into the market in the 2000s. So, I mean, if you're a brand new investor in the 2010s, right? Mm-hmm. So what was the average return in 2010s?
Right. So between 2010 and 2019, the average annual return on the S&P 500 was 13.4%. And then vice versa on the bond market, the bond return was an average return of 4.1%. So a lot of us coming into investing in that time frame, which was definitely me, we've experienced a bull market this whole time. So I feel like we have a greater, we don't really truly know what losses look like until, you know, this year, the last couple of years that we've had some recent recession/bear market.
Well, Crystal, welcome to your first bear market.
Yeah, it's rough.
I mean, if you think about it, you know, if you're to be lumping in, I mean, for you, especially for myself, if you have a longer term horizon, I mean, this is a great opportunity for you. And so, I guess, you know, let's look at some of those, you know, how we wind up framing the opportunity that we have at hand, and just get, you know, when it comes to conversations that we have around investments and financial planning today, how do we overcome some of these biases that we have?
Yeah. So a lot of the times we have to really take the emotion out for the clients, because when it comes to your own money, you're far more emotional because you made that, you earned that. You don't necessarily want to lose it, but you also want it to grow. So you have to take the risk with the reward, right? So one of the biggest challenges that we have as an advisor is helping the client take the emotion out when it comes to their risk tolerance. So a lot of the things that we'll see is risk tolerance changes. What we want to keep with the client is just making sure that they know what their risk tolerance is, and we can fully understand what threshold they have for taking on that risk, and kind of keep them not moving in and out. So a lot of the times what we'll see with clients is if we're in a strong bull market, generally speaking, clients want to get more and more aggressive. They want to raise their risk tolerance. They want more equity exposure when that's not necessarily the best thing, because a lot of the times they're usually doing this after we've been in a bull market for a while, or the market's been doing very well for the year, and they're like, all right, let's increase the equity exposure. And maybe that's at the height of the market, right? So wrong time to do so. And then, you know, we've increased their equity exposure because they're very adamant about it. And then all of a sudden things reverse, we go into a bear market and they lose a bunch more money.
You know, kind of goes back to that loss aversion then.
Yes, exactly.
You know, the pain of that loss is going to hurt even more because they want to be more aggressive.
Right. And if we had just held steady, we could have not possibly locked in a lot of those, you know, or raised the equity exposure and then had more available for a loss. So it's just kind of keeping them at bay and not constantly going in and out of their threshold for risk, because then we'll see people, once we've hit a bear market, they want to go to all cash. And it's the worst thing you can do, lock in all your losses and take on that. So,
especially if you do have a longer term time horizon, right? Yes. So I think a part of that conversation really has to come around, you know, when do we need the money and what the purpose is for it, right? So we can't necessarily take the same type of risk with money that we're going to be needing in the next 6 months, as opposed to the money that we need in 6 years or 16 years, right? So we can take a little bit more risk with that longer term money as opposed to the short term money.
Exactly. So maybe the retirement money, we can be a little bit more risky, but when it comes to the taxable or your play money on the side that you want to buy a house with, you want to be a little bit more conservative.
Right, right. What do you think? I mean, when you look at the market today, And then you look at, of course, we're not always going to be in a bear market, right? Mm-hmm. And if we were to take a look, so here I had found some information here from a blog called The Wealth of Common Sense, and they were referencing just the future returns when the stock market is down 25% or more since 1950. And if you look at those returns, so we have a total of 9 different times, including this current bear market right now. So let's just say like 8 times in previous markets. If you look 1 year out, the stock market on average has been up 21.6%. If you look 3 years out, the stock market is up 36%. So this would be the S&P 500. If you look at it 5 years out, it's up 83%. And up after 10 years, it's up 213%. So as you wind up seeing the market today, and then, there's other things at work too, right? So if you were to take a look at presidential election cycles, and you look at this year in a presidential election cycle, historically speaking, this is always the most volatile, and these 9 months wind up being absolutely more flat than any other given year, right? Mm-hmm. And if you look out 1 year after the election, since 1950, every single midterm election cycle, the stock market has done 15.1%. So the S&P 500 is up 15.1% on average 1 year out from a midterm election. So come, what is that, November 9th?
Yes.
So November 9th. So 1 year out from November 9th on average. Past performance is not indicative of any sort of future results, right? But I guess a part of this is that if I'm making some sort of investment thesis about where I want to be putting money, and I'm trying to place money in a direction where it does have some historical backing to it, that's a pretty good one, right? As opposed to any other year in an election cycle. So that third year after the midterms, we're talking about 15.1%. Every other year, the stock market has returned 7.1%. So that's a pretty significant difference there as far as the returns are coming out. So post-bear market returns, we have the post-midterm election cycles coming in. So those are some pretty good winds at our backs, if we're trying to say like history is going to be any sort of a helper as far as our investment returns going forward.
Right. So we have a double whammy right now of bad things happening, but going forward, we also have both very positive light at the end of the tunnel situations that we can put ourselves in. So maybe now would be the right time to really look into investing and putting some of that cash to work that you do have on the side. Stop thinking of this loss aversion bias that you have and have that ready to go. So that way when we do see a market turnaround, we can get invested and use that rally going up.
Exactly. Because if you look at the stock market right now, the stock market is at a discount. Mm-hmm. And, be ready to buy at this point in time. Because if you look at, your traditional 60-40 portfolio from the past, stocks are now at a discount. And if you wind up looking at the 40% of that 60-40 portfolio, your fixed income is actually getting much more income these days. Mm-hmm. So that even is much more attractive. So just looking at your overall investment thesis today, as opposed to 1 year ago, if you had have a lump of cash, I'd rather be the investor today and the opportunity going forward.
Right. And even if you don't have any cash on the side right now, if you have built up a traditional IRA, one huge thing that you could do to kind of help yourself and set yourself up for success in the future is looking into Roth conversions. Right now we're at historically low tax brackets. Yes, we've gone into a bear market, but if we're thinking that we're going to have positive returns going forward, play into that, do a Roth conversion up to whatever tax bracket you're in. We like to fill the bucket approach or work with an advisor to help you out or CPA, but converting it now and having that money ready to go within a Roth and investing that now, that's all tax-free returns that you have going forward to set yourself up during retirement or, 5 years out from now if you do a Roth conversion today.
Yeah, while the market is down, I'd rather shift that money over into a tax-free bucket as opposed to having that grow tax-deferred. And then who knows what that tax calculation is going to be going forward, right?
Exactly. Well, we already know come 2026, we're already higher. So
that is going to be higher. Yes.
Oh man. And if I'm a betting person, taxes are going up. So
if I'm a betting person.
Yeah. So I think one of the biggest things that we need to focus on is how do we break these behaviors? How do we break our own biases? Because obviously it's not an easy thing to do. And I think one of the biggest, most important ways to kind of break it is just getting to know yourself and being aware of what biases you have. So I think because obviously they influence your financial decisions greatly. So I think two of the biggest biases that I have is definitely loss aversion. I don't like to lose my money, but I also know that I have a long time horizon and, you know, things do bounce back, but also maybe confirmation bias. I do look to see if I'm going to be right or not. So, and generally speaking, I'm always right. Just kidding.
I've learned that about you.
Yeah, no, I am not always right. I will be the first to admit. So I think those are two of the biggest biases that I have to work on for myself. What about you, Aaron? Do you think you have some biases?
Yeah, I mean, I would say a part of that winds up being the familiarity bias. You know, there are certain stocks, there are certain companies that I like, and I probably look for information about those kinds of companies. So it's kind of the familiarity, the confirmation bias. I think we always, the confirmation bias winds up being the one that's probably familiar to everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the confirmation. So Ray Dalio has this quote. He was talking about just making decisions, and he talks about the two biggest barriers to good decision making are your ego and your blind spots. And just being able to be aware of what those blind spots are, and just getting the point and counterpoint to every single decision that it is that you're making. So if you love energy stocks, tech stocks, gold, you know, whatever that is, what is the counterpoint that could blow up your thesis?
Mm-hmm. Right?
And just be aware of what else is going to be, I guess, just be aware of whatever that decision-making process is, right? So you're comfortable with how you're placing funds these days, right?
Mm-hmm.
I would say the other big thing is right now, just avoid the panic selling. You know, staying invested, you know, understanding what your long-term time horizon really looks like, what the purpose of that money is. Because once you wind up selling out, it's tough to get back in. You know, when's the right time to go ahead and get back into the market? Now, I mean, if you wind up looking at our portfolios, you know, right now we're still at an underweight with equities, but we're underweight. We're not all the way out, right? And so it's probably best to just have that money, that dry powder sitting on the sidelines so that when we're ready to go in, you know, it's going to make a whole lot of sense for us, right? And we're looking at that as in a long-term time horizon.
Right. And that's why it's important to consult with your financial representative regularly, because a lot of the times, you know, when clients call in wondering what's going on with their portfolio and the market, a lot of the times they do think that it's worse because they have this emotional tie to their money. So, you know, hearing from your advisor and talking to them and what they see as their outlook, because right now we're obviously minimum risk, right, when it comes to our clients' portfolio. So we have as little in equities as possible right now. We have,
but still invested.
We are still invested, exactly. But as far as their risk tolerance is concerned, it is the minimal amount of equity exposure that we can have. And then we do have that cash on the side too within their portfolios, because we do think that going forward 6 to 12 months out from now, we are going to be back into some positive territory and things are looking better, especially when it comes to fixed income. Yeah, we had a horrible, horrible route this year because the Fed was raising so aggressively. But now, because they have raised so aggressively, we went from zero yield to now we're making pretty attractive yields within the bond market. So municipals are looking good again. Treasuries are looking good again. So it is something.
No, on that note, I had seen something from the Capital Group or American Funds, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about the bond market historically weathering rate hikes. And so after a Fed rate hike, after they're done raising, so that's after the first year of rate hikes, the bond market has a annualized return of 13.2%. And after the second year of rate hikes, it has a return of 12.6%. So you're talking double digit returns potentially on, you know, when you look back on it historically, history being our friend, right? But
exactly.
That's not going to say that happens in the future.
but
potentially double-digit returns on just the bond market, right? So it's kind of laid out that case for both the bond and the stock market of where that opportunity winds up lying these days. And just kind of looking with a realistic lens on it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as you're reviewing your portfolio, Fidelity has some other information that's kind of interesting too, that as the people who review their portfolios too regularly tend to have an underweight position in equities. So clients that look at their portfolio more than one time a month, they have 41% in equities versus people who look at their portfolios on a yearly basis, they have 70% in equities, which if you're a long-term investor, that may be the better place for you to be because, you know, ultimately you're going to have, better returns in the long run if you wind up having that larger equity position.
Right. And that's why you have us as advisors to help you get through that. I mean, we're the ones that are supposed to take on the stress. We're the ones that are supposed to look at this and help walk you through it. Don't necessarily take it on yourself unless, you know, it's a hobby for you and you like doing it. And maybe you want an advisor as a, you know, second viewpoint to kind of bounce your ideas off of. It's just something to have in your back pocket, just consulting with someone else and particularly an advisor, just to make sure that, you know, your bias isn't working against you. And I think the last biggest one is just to stay focused. Don't dwell in the past. And really, like Aaron was saying, is just focus on your long-term goals and your time horizon and not letting what's happening in the here and now dictate, you know, your decision-making.
While it might be tough inherently to be a long-term investor, you have to have somewhat of an optimistic outlook on the future. Think of it like this, you know, every single past bear market that we've had and we've gone through always winds up looking like an opportunity after the fact. And every single bear market that we're going through right now in the here and today is always a crisis. So keep that in mind as far as what you're going through right now and just understand, work with your financial advisor, you know, reach out to us if you do have any sort of questions about what your situation is, because it's not necessarily the same as your neighbors or what your coworkers is, right? So just understand what your financial plan should be. And if you don't have a financial plan, it's probably good to reach out to someone and get one.
Yes, I completely agree. Let us help you.
Let us help you. So Crystal, if someone does want to get a hold of you, how do they wind up doing that?
Yes. So you can call me directly at the office. The number here is 858-487-3939. And you can either ask for Crystal Colbert or you can dial my extension, which is 117. What about you, Aaron? If they want to get a hold of you, how can they get a hold of you?
It's that same number, the 858-487-3939. And my extension is 105. Just as well, you can email us. That would be crystal.colbert@financialsense.com. And I'm aaron.weekman@financialsense.com. So it's been a pleasure speaking with you all today. If you have any questions, please let us know. Take care.
Talk to you soon.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.